This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, April 8th, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, WikiLeaks releases a database of nearly 2 million U.S. diplomatic documents. It's the group's largest publication to date. Protests against the U.S. targeted killing program continue as activists and faith groups highlight the CEOs and companies profiting from drone manufacturing. And we'll go to Bolivia, where violent attacks on women have sparked protests and legislative action. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. Margaret Thatcher, Britain's longest-serving prime minister of the 20th century, died today. President Obama paid tribute, saying, quote, "America has lost a true friend." Her hardline approach earned her a nickname, the Iron Lady, but it also garnered numerous critics. In 1980, she famously declared,
"You turn if you want to. The lady's not for turning."
In 1981, she refused to negotiate with hunger-striking Irish Republican prisoners who wanted to be recognized as political prisoners. The hunger strike ended only after 10 prisoners starved to death. Abroad, her belligerent approach was evident when she ordered military action to retake the tiny British territory of the Falkland Islands. In 1982, Argentina invaded the islands in the South Atlantic. Nearly 800 soldiers from both sides died. Many political analysts say Thatcher is the force that shifted British politics to the right. Current Prime Minister David Cameron continues many of the policies she introduced. During her 11 years in office, she oversaw widespread privatization of state-run services and fought bitter battles to weaken British trade unions. Riots over what became known as a poll tax were part of what hastened her exit from office. Margaret Thatcher died following a stroke. She was 87. There's no official word from NATO yet on reports that 11 Afghan children were killed in an ISAF airstrike in Kunar province on Saturday. Pictures reportedly of the children show them lined up on the ground, wrapped in shawls, their impassive faces revealed. Most of them appear to be less than 5 years old. A spokesperson for the governor of Kunar said that one woman was also killed in the attack on civilian residences. The Afghan Interior Ministry said 6 militants died. In an ISAF statement, the agency said they are aware of reports of civilian casualties and are investigating. Further, the statement said the international force provided air support, but they had no ground troops involved, and that coalition forces called for the airstrike, not Afghan forces. President Hamid Karzai has banned Afghan troops from requesting airstrikes and NATO from firing on populated areas. In Gaza, Hamas authorities impose new restrictions on young men regarding their hairstyles and clothing. Local youth say they're angry, and human rights groups call the ban a repression of personal freedom. FSRN's Rami El-Maghari reports.
Many young men in Gaza are outraged over the new Hamas ban on what they call inappropriate hairstyles, including long hair and certain Western cuts. Mahmoud Ashair is a 21-year-old young man from central Gaza Strip.
If someone tries to force me not to wear something or not to have my hair long, I'll react violently. I will not keep silent toward whoever that someone is.
Hamas authorities also banned men from wearing low-slung trousers. According to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, Hamas police have stopped young men in the street, beaten them, and shaved their heads. But in a statement, Hamas police denied the men were beaten and said the ban was in response to complaints from school headmasters about boys harassing girls in the streets. The Islamist Hamas government has previously banned women from smoking water pipes in public places and shop owners from displaying women's underwear on their front doors. Hamas says such measures are meant to preserve cultural identity of the Palestinian society. Rami El-Maghari, FSRN, Gaza.
The UN Humanitarian Aid Agency working in Gaza announced today that they will restart food assistance delivery tomorrow. The UN Relief and Works Agency stopped providing food aid last week after protests broke out at their offices when cash supports were cut on April 1st. And a bill that defines life as beginning at fertilization is awaiting the signature of Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. The Kansas law also denies tax breaks to abortion providers that are available to all other medical facilities. And it mandates that doctors tell patients that having an abortion increases the risk of breast cancer. But according to the National Cancer Institute, while carrying a pregnancy to term can lower the risk, there's no evidence that ending a pregnancy increases it. Republican Governor Brownback is widely expected to sign the bill. For FSRN, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. WikiLeaks has released its largest publication to date, a database of more than 1.7 million U.S. diplomatic documents from the years 1973 to 1976 during the administration of controversial Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The information reveals global diplomacy, including aid to Brazil's military dictatorship, the recruitment of informants within unions and opposition movements around the world, and involvement in secret weapons sales. Most of the documents had been technically public already, but WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange told reporters Monday that the confusing, non-searchable format they were in was another form of secrecy. FSRN's Alice Olstein was at this morning's press conference and brings us this report.
WikiLeaks calls the new database the Public Library of U.S. Diplomacy. Among the 1.7 million files released Sunday is a 1973 cable from the Vatican to the U.S. State Department that said reports of murder by the Pinochet dictatorship in Chile were communist propaganda. A 1976 document from the U.S. ambassador in Brasilia acknowledged the Brazilian dictatorship was responsible for torture, but recommended giving military aid to them anyways. Some of these documents were available as individual digital files on archives.gov, while the previously top-secret State Department cables were held only in print format. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange called the documents hidden treasures.
They are technically in the public domain, but as you can see with all the news stories that have come out today, they're not practically available to the public in a way that's efficient enough for people to be able to make sense of them or use them. They are in the form of 1.7 million PDF files, so they're essentially not usable to do sophisticated searches across the lot.
Assange joined Monday's DC press conference via Skype from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he's been confined since June out of fear he'll be extradited to the United States if he leaves the building. He said it was also important to publish the Kissinger documents in case the U.S. ever tried to reclassify them, as they have done or attempted with millions of other documents.
Our government has a tendency to classify by default.
That's Rainey Reitman with the Freedom of the Press Foundation, a legal and financial supporter of WikiLeaks. She told FSRN the U.S. government has an addiction to secrecy, which leads to long-term impunity for government wrongdoing.
By making information classified, we're preventing the public from getting accurate and timely understanding of how the government is working. I think that becomes problematic because it prevents us from taking swift action. For example, choosing not to elect another official who has done something corrupt, or supporting legislation to correct a major problem, or even just having public hearings or having reporters inquire into a story. Those are all things that can't happen if we don't have access into the information for decades.
A few weeks ago, Private First Class Bradley Manning pled guilty to a military tribunal for intentionally passing government files to WikiLeaks. Manning has been in pretrial confinement for more than 1,000 days, much of it in solitary confinement, and faces a number of charges, including aiding the enemy. WikiLeaks spokesperson Kristen Hrafnsson called the case outrageous, but told FSRN he doesn't think the government's prosecution of Manning has had a chilling effect on other whistleblowers.
I think there's been a strengthening of determination by individuals to get information out to the general public. I think people are also seeing the effect and the importance of getting information out. The effect of the WikiLeaks publications are, I think, an encouragement that will counter any discouragement.
Assange agreed, but said Manning's plight did impede recent efforts to investigate U.S. Colonel James Steele's ties to torture in Iraq. When reporters from the BBC and The Guardian tried to interview former and current military officials, several people referenced the prosecution of Manning as the reason they did not want to speak. Alice Olstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
A wave of rape, femicide, and murder of women in Bolivia has sparked a series of protests by women's groups and other civil society organizations demanding action to stop these kinds of crimes. Following public pressure, lawmakers rushed the approval of a new law that, among other measures, increases prison sentences for rape and femicide. But some activists say that's not enough and are demanding that communities address prevention and problems ingrained in patriarchal society. FSRN's Aldo Oriana Lopez reports from Cochabamba, Bolivia.
Across Bolivia, 7 out of 10 women experience physical, psychological, or sexual violence, according to the national government's Department of Justice. Every 2 days, a woman is murdered. The Center for Information and Development of Women has documented 30 cases of femicide, the killing of women because they are females, in January and February of this year. One recent case prompted outrage across the country. In February, TV journalist Anali Waicho was stabbed to death in the presence of her 5-year-old son by her husband, a police officer. Prior to the murder, police had failed to investigate more than a dozen complaints filed by Waicho against her husband. Due to all these facts, women's groups took the streets in some cities to demand an end to the impunity and to the ongoing violence against women. She may be your mother, she may be your sister, the protesters chant. I don't want to be the next one tomorrow. At a recent protest in Cochabamba, where many of these crimes are taking place, thousands of people marched through the central street, shouting slogans against the aggressions towards women. Former FSRN contributor Lenny Olivera is a feminist and a member of the collective Warmi Pachacuti, a group of female musicians in Cochabamba that focus on culture and women's rights issues. She addressed the crowd about what they can do to stem the violence.
Women, it's important to realize that sexual abuse and rape is one of the worst forms of torture against women. Enough of so much injustice and impunity. Women are humans, and we have rights. We cannot wait for laws to achieve justice because laws don't work. One way to fight violence against women is to get organized ourselves. We must not be silent. We must bring justice. Long live organized women. Long live.
Violence against women in Bolivia has been widely addressed in the public debate by civil society, media, lawmakers, and the national government. The discussion has focused primarily on the causes of this kind of violence and how it can be stopped. Women's feminist groups and NGOs that work on this issue say the main problem is the patriarchal system. Rosemary Mills is a feminist and independent activist.
Violence against women is something that has to do with power structures within which we live. Clearly, we see that there are still those power structures that lead women to be dominated by men. And when women rebel against this domination, there is more oppression.
Amils says violence goes beyond physical brutality.
La violencia hacia las mujeres es una cuestión que tiene que ver con todos los ámbitos de la vida.
Violence is an issue that has to do with all aspects of life, ranging from economic violence, violence in education, to types of physical and sexual violence. It's not a private matter. It is not only an issue for some social groups, it has to do with all women.
Sino que tiene que ver con todas las mujeres.
Many women's rights advocates say another problem is the inefficiency of the judicial system and laws. According to official figures, 9 out of 10 physical and sexual aggressions against women in Bolivia go unpunished. Silvia Vega works with the Female Institute for Integral Training, an NGO that promotes the rights and empowerment of women.
Our justice system is really weak here in Bolivia. Although we have regulations in favor of eradicating and fighting violence against women, they are not applied in practice for different reasons.
This climate of violence and protest pushed authorities and lawmakers to pass a new law that, among other things, increases the punishment for femicides and rape and will create in the coming months a special unit within the Bolivian Police Department to fight violence against women. Civil society groups are already beginning to discuss the scope of the new law, the funding, and how it should be applied. Silvia Vega says the law is one step in achieving justice.
This law has positive aspects. For example, in the case of femicide, the punishment is 30 years in prison without right of pardon, and between 15 and 20 years in the case of rape. It is also a step forward for us, but we have to keep fighting to get this law implemented.
But violence prevention is also necessary, says Zulema Callejas, who represents the Network Against Violence to Women, a coalition of NGOs and other groups that works on this issue.
It's not about putting aggressors in jail. The solution has to start with a basic education for people about respect for all people and increasing communication. Leaders should put more attention on this issue and provide spaces of empowerment to women.
Some people question the effectiveness of the new law and of the judicial system in general. Activist Rosemary Mills says self-organization is a more effective solution to stop this violence.
The only answer I think that really makes sense is self-organization. That means that women begin to support each other, generate support groups, self-defense groups, because it is necessary to defend ourselves. But we also need self-help and education groups where we can deepen our understanding about the way we are experiencing the situation in our daily lives.
The new measures to fight violence against women went into effect March 9th. But the debate is not over yet. Some women's groups have announced that they will be involved in drafting the regulations and will be closely monitoring implementation of the new law. Aldo Orellana Lopez, Free Speech Radio News, Cochabamba, Bolivia.
I'm Ralph Nader. Why do we need Free Speech Radio News? With 200 reporters over 6 continents giving you the reality of the world, and not taking any corporate money? The answer is in the question. If you really want to learn about what's going on in terms of the brutality around the world, the power of militarism and empire, how people are trying to preserve the planet from climate change to environmental improvement for farmers and consumers and workers, if you want to learn more about what people are really doing to fight back, people who are suffering but not giving up, you will listen to Free Speech Radio News. Free Speech Radio News cannot exist without your support. That's what makes it honest. The contact for your support, fsrn.org. Let's remember that, fsrn.org. They're waiting for your collaboration.
The This week, activists in cities across the U.S. are continuing to protest the U.S. drone killing program. Over the weekend, protesters with groups including Code Pink gathered outside the home of Neil Blue, the CEO of the military contractor General Atomics near San Diego. General Atomics makes multiple models of the Predator drone aircraft with surveillance and rapid strike capabilities, according to the company's website. In February, General Atomics announced the sale of the first Predator drone system to the United Arab Emirates. Protests also targeted other companies, such as Northrop Grumman, which produces the Global Hawk. They're part of dozens of events planned for the month in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. For more, we're joined by Andy Griggs. He's program director with the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace in Los Angeles, one of the groups taking part in the events. Welcome to FSRN.
Thank you so much.
First, describe, as an interfaith community, your group's response to the U.S. drone program.
When we first heard of the drone program and the extrajudicial killings that were being authorized under it, we were very concerned about this and began to do our own investigation into what was going on. And in the last several months, we've had a couple of our monthly vigils. We've been having monthly vigils for over 10 years, once a month, and we've devoted a couple of them now to drone warfare, the issues of drone warfare. And just recently, we passed a statement. We issued a statement, and I'll just read a little section of it, if I may. The world's great religions teach us to cherish human life. This impersonal, risk-free killing of people on the other side of the globe runs counter to religious belief and the teachings of our traditions.
Andy Griggs, you have as part of your group religious leaders from various faiths, Jewish, Episcopal, Quaker, Muslim, Methodist, and more. What are the moral or ethical issues raised by the drone program, or as you just read, remote killings?
First of all, it's an impersonal, it's abstract, it's antiseptic, it's easy. It makes it easier for somebody to justify going home at night saying they are not, they're not aware of this. The labeling, the outright labeling of all military age males as combatants, justifying their murder, is incredible profiling, which is another issue. The idea of a secret kill list, giving the president the right to act as prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner, is totally immoral and against beliefs of almost any religious faith. So those are just some of the issues involved.
And have you seen, as faith communities, that those attending services, those at religious gatherings, have an interest in this issue?
There is an interest. I think from within the last 2 years, as it's become more and more aware, as people become more and more aware of what this drone program is, it was very interesting to us to see just less than a year ago, there were, it was over 60% of people approved of the drone program. And but as we see people getting involved, we see various groups doing their own, learning themselves about what's going on, and coming out, for example, at our last vigil, which we normally have 5 to 10 people who stay after our meetings for our vigil. We had close to 15 to 20 people. We're having this luncheon on Wednesday. We've got already, in the middle of the day, we've got well over 50 registrants for that, and I expect that to grow. People are becoming more aware, and I think individual communities social justice groups within churches and other religious communities are becoming aware of this.
As we mentioned, there are events this month, also more this week. You're organizing one this Wednesday with Medea Benjamin of Code Pink and Shakil Sayed of the Southern California Islamic Shura Council. What's on the agenda?
Yes, basically, we have started a program which we had done many months, many years ago, and we're restarting that, which is a program of justice luncheons. The program lasts, we serve a lunch, delicious lunch, and then we bring in, Medea will speak for about 45 minutes or so, and Shakil and our the respondent will respond, and there will be a question and answer period.
Andy Griggs is the program director with the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace in Los Angeles. They are taking part in the nationwide protests against drone warfare during the month of April. Andy Griggs, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dorian.
In California, efforts to end unlimited corporate money in politics are taking shape in local and statewide resolutions. One is coming before voters in May. It's part of a grassroots nationwide push to take huge corporate donations out of elections. FSRN's Larry Buell has more from Los Angeles.
When LA voters go to the polls to elect a mayor next month, they'll also have a chance to make their voices heard about unlimited campaign contributions. Prop C, sponsored by the Common Cause and California Public Interest Research Group, is LA's answer to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on Citizens United. That 5-4 ruling struck down campaign finance regulations and permitted corporations and unions to spend unlimited amounts of money to influence elections. The ruling also paved the way for the rise of super PACs. Prop C states that Los Angeles voters demand limits on political campaign spending and that corporations should not have the constitutional rights of human beings. And it instructs Los Angeles elected officials and area legislative representatives to promote that policy through amendments to the United States Constitution. It's not a binding measure, but supporters say its passage would add to a nationwide grassroots movement to force the U.S. Congress to outlaw unlimited corporate money in campaigns. L.A. City Council member Richard Alarcon introduced Prop C.
It does, we would hope, give encouragement to other cities who are similarly upset at the decision, and hopefully they will inspire them to pass their own measures to send the same message. If two-thirds of the states in the United States were to pass a resolution like this, we could overturn the law.
Another California bill demanding an end to corporate personhood is AJR1. Similar to a bill that passed both houses last year, it advanced out of the Assembly Judiciary Committee Tuesday. Assemblymember Mike Gatto hopes AJR1 and other measures nationwide will build momentum for Congress to act.
My resolution, which is AJR1, takes advantage of the provision in Article 5 of the Federal Constitution that allows the states to, if two-thirds of them pass similar resolutions, to force Congress to call this constitutional convention on the issue of overturning Citizens United. The hope that I have is that some of the other states in the union would follow suit. There's an old saying that as the coasts go, so go the nation.
Nearly a dozen states and hundreds of cities and towns have passed resolutions calling for an amendment overturning Citizens United. In March, independent U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders and Democratic Representative Ted Deutch introduced an amendment in Congress to do the same. Opponents of Citizens United hope state and local resolutions reach a tipping point in the next few years, but they acknowledge it will be a long battle. Some compare the journey to historical struggles, including the passage of the 17th Amendment allowing for direct elections of senators and the 21st Amendment repealing prohibition. Those campaigns also started at the grassroots level. Larry Buell, FSRN, Los Angeles.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapshi and Janine Etter. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.